Welcome back. In this part of our program, we take a look at another common condition which usually requires routine referral, glaucoma. Glaucoma diagnosis and referrals have seen great enhancements from the development of referral refinement schemes. From a clinical perspective, this is clearly a good thing, as it leads to fewer unnecessary referrals, which can lead to an overstretching of secondary care resources, as well as levels of undue stress for a concerned patient. But is this always obvious to patients?
I went to my opticians for a routine eye examination, and while I was there, they puffed some air into my eye and said that I had high pressure or something, which worried me quite a bit. I still had to wait 6 weeks before my scheduled hospital appointment, and once I was there, they said I was wasting their time. Why did I have to go to hospital if there was nothing wrong in the first place?
To find out more, we travel to Manchester to speak to Amanda Harding, principal optometrist at the Manchester Royal Eye Hospital. Since we last spoke, new NICE guidelines for glaucoma referral have been put in place. Can you explain the new guidelines?
So the original NICE guidelines on chronic open-angle glaucoma and ocular hypertension did not give any guidance on referral. The original guidance was about the management of chronic open-angle glaucoma and glaucoma suspects and ocular hypertension only. Unfortunately, because the guidance advised that certain groups of patients with thinner corneas of younger age should be treated if their pressures were over 21 millimetres of mercury, this was taken as referral guidance by the AOP. This led to an increased referral rate of glaucoma and ocular hypertension suspects into the hospital eye service. After a period of time, after the release of the last guidance in 2009, a joint guidance from the College of Optometrists and the Royal College of Ophthalmologists was released, which helped to retrieve the situation, and referral rates came down slightly. When the NICE guidance was reviewed, it was highlighted that referral guidance should be included for the first time. The guidance states that the following tests should all be offered before referral into the hospital eye service. So there should be central visual field assessment using standard automated perimetry, optic nerve assessment via stereoscopic slit lamp biomicroscopy and OCT or optic nerve head imaging if available, Goldmann applanation tonometry, and peripheral anterior chamber assessment using gonioscopy or, if this is not available, Van Herrick or anterior OCT assessment. They describe these tests as case-finding and say they are not the same as a standard sight test. And most community optometrists would definitely agree with this, as they definitely don't form the part of all routine sight tests at every visit. The rest of the guidance on referral states that patients should not be referred solely based on non-contact tonometry pressure measurements, and that patients who've been previously seen at the hospital eye service and discharged because they don't have glaucoma should only be re-referred if they have clinical circumstances that have changed from when they were discharged from the eye hospital. Before referral, patients should be considered for repeat measurements, such as a repeat IOP measurement or visual field testing, to confirm that the pressures are 24 millimetres of mercury or above, or that there is a definite visual field defect, unless clinical circumstances indicate that the need for a much more urgent or emergency referral. Referrals should be made for investigation and diagnosis of chronic open-angle glaucoma and related conditions after considering repeat measures when the following is present. Either there should be an optic nerve damage consistent with glaucoma or a field defect consistent with glaucoma or pressures of 24 millimetres of mercury or more on Goldmann tonometry. With any referral, all the test results and examination details should be provided. And if the pressure is below 24 millimetres of mercury, then patients should be advised to carry on seeing their own optometrist for regular review.
Your scheme in Manchester was one of the first referral filtering services. Can you tell us a bit about the different referral filtering services in the UK, such as repeat measurements, case finding, or true referral refinement schemes?
So, traditionally, glaucoma was picked up during routine eye examination, known as opportunistic case finding. This is different to the NICE definition of case finding in the current NICE guidance. Many of these referrals were false positives, meaning the patients did not actually have glaucoma. If these cases were referred into the hospital eye service directly without any repeat measurements or enhanced assessment, 40% of them would be false positive. This causes undue worry for many patients, and they may have to wait a number of weeks or months to have the reassurance that they do not have the disease. There is obviously a cost burden to the NHS as well, and many patients need to be seen twice or more before they can be discharged back to the community. This led to the introduction of referral filtering services to improve the quality of glaucoma referrals and reduce the false positive rate of referral. In 2016, the Royal College of Ophthalmologists published a commissioning guide for glaucoma, which defines the different types of schemes and the additional qualifications that may be required to work in those schemes. Thinking about the different schemes, first of all, we have repeat measures. This is a term specific to glaucoma that primarily describes measurement of parameters related to the diagnosis of glaucoma. Repeat measure schemes normally repeat IOP measurement with Goldman tonometry and may also repeat visual field assessment. Repeat measure schemes can be performed by community optometrists who have achieved core competence. Enhanced case finding or schemes like the Manchester Glaucoma Enhanced Referral Scheme add value to the referral into the hospital eye service and are more likely to reduce false positive rates than repeat measures alone. They tend to include a detailed anterior segment assessment with a Van Herrick's assessment, Goldman applanation tonometry, pachymetry, visual field assessment to the NICE standards, and dilated fundus and optic disc assessment. Traditionally, training and accreditation has been required to take part in these schemes. This training is now aligned with the professional certificate in glaucoma introduced by the College of Optometrists. A true referral refinement scheme, as defined by the Royal College of Ophthalmologists guidelines, must undertake sufficient tests to diagnose ocular hypertension and suspect chronic open angle glaucoma. Therefore, they must be able to perform gonioscopy to rule out angle closure pathology as per NICE guidance. Those working in a true referral refinement scheme would need a qualification equivalent to the higher certificate in glaucoma from the College of Optometrists, as this includes training on gonioscopy.
Thinking about our case study, how important is clear communication with patients about the process?
It is so important to communicate effectively with your patients. This enables you to inform the patients of the pathway they will be on and the likely timescales. Therefore, it is imperative to know what the arrangements are in your area and how long the wait is. For example, you might be referring to an enhanced referral scheme where you know they will be seen within 2 weeks. Alternatively, you may work in an area with a repeat measure scheme that you perform yourself and then refer into the hospital eye service. It's important to find out what the wait for a new appointment is like in your area. Due to the fact that glaucoma is a chronic, slowly progressing condition, most units will not class glaucoma as an urgent problem unless the pressure is greater than 35 millimetres of mercury or you suspect an acute attack of glaucoma. It is also important to inform the patient of what you think the likely diagnosis might be. I still get patients referred to me that are totally unaware of the reason for referral. Glaucoma is asymptomatic and therefore patients are unlikely to present because they have symptoms, and so it's very important that they are informed of why they need to attend.
Looking forward, and based on your experience in Manchester, do you foresee a national strategy in England, and what would that look like?
In Manchester, we do favour a scheme similar to our own with training and accreditation. It adds value to the referrals and reduces the false positive rate to about 10%. And increases the skill base of the community optometrists working in our area. It's more expensive to set up than repeat measures in the short term, but has longer term benefits of improving the glaucoma assessment knowledge in the community.
We now return to Scotland, where we talk to Catherine Morrison at NHS Education for Scotland, or NES, about how the new Scottish Intercollegiate Guidelines Network, or SIGN guidelines, have been implemented since our last discussion. Thank you for joining us, Cathy. Last time we spoke to Janet Pooley about the SIGN guidelines and independent prescribing. What's happened since then?
So, since you've last heard from Janet, the SIGN guidelines were introduced in April 2015 in Scotland, and this was SIGN 144, and this was the guidance for referral for glaucoma into secondary care and also for safe discharge. This means now the information that is given in referrals from secondary care should be much more detailed. So we now include things like repeated intraocular pressure measurements, and they should be done with Goldman or Perkins tonometry. We also include things like the pachymetry results, and we were very fortunate here in Scotland to receive a grant for this from the Scottish Government that would allow us to purchase pachymeters, and the Scottish Government purchased pachymeters for every practice within Scotland. So the corneal thickness is now included in the referrals. We also have the anterior chamber measurement, so a Van Herrick's measurement as well. And when we look at the optic disc assessment now, I think that's probably the biggest change. we are to include the size of the disc. Now that, when you look at the reports from the studies that have just been published, that's maybe not being reported on as well as it could be. That's partly to do with the fact that a lot of optometrists maybe have struggled to do disc size due to the kit that they actually have in practice, and they don't actually have a graticule that can measure disc height, and not everybody would have a slit lamp that isn't able to do that. But the requirement has just been to do a small, medium or large size disc. The one thing that also was mentioned in the sign guidance was also the fact that there should be a safe discharge. That again has been very health board dependent. Certain health boards have opted to discharge quite a lot of stable glaucoma patients into the community, and other health boards are holding on to those currently at the minute, perhaps in the wait for more training for community optometrists.
Is any additional training required, and how's this carried out?
When the sign guideline was implemented, NHS Education for Scotland ran training around the country. We ran training for the two things that were probably the biggest change. One was pachymetry, to introduce the pachymeters and how to use those and how to interpret that result, which was just to actually write the result in the referral. Do not make any adaptation to your pressure. And we showed how to use the pachymeter safely. In addition, we also went through the DDLS scale, so the SPATH grading system, which was the disc damage likelihood scale. And we were really fortunate to have Dr. Donald Montgomery, who let us use a lecture of his. And he has these excellent, an excellent teaching resource, which he also let us use, which was 20 disc images that were stereoscopic viewed, and you were able to then work out where the thinnest part of the neural retinal rim was and where you what grading scale you would actually have given it in the DDLS. And then we showed how to simplify that for sign.
So what does it mean for the future of referral pathways in Scotland? And would you like to see similar systems in other disease areas?
So in regards to the referral pathways in Scotland, sign 144 has been a great introduction to show that given a guidance, the optometrists, community optometrists can adhere to it. There's always room for improvement, and we're very aware of that in NES, and we are always keen to educate within that. And we have e-learning packages for those as well for glaucoma. So would we want to see other pathways, other guidance? Of course we would. Anything that increases our relationship with secondary care and improves our relationship with secondary care, we're always very much for that. And I think in Scotland we're so fortunate that we do actually now have a very good relationship between the hospital eye service and community optometry. And that's imperative and necessary for the future. We have an ageing population, we have waiting lists and waiting times in hospitals that are not getting any shorter, and we have a shortage of ophthalmologists throughout the UK, and Scotland's not alone in that. So as community optometrists, we need to look at what we can do to help these patients, so that patients who really need to be seen within the hospital eye service are seen within the hospital eye service. And those that can be managed in the community with perhaps upskilling of community optometrists as possible, we should be looking to maintain those patients and in our practice.
There is still a question mark over the significance of the ISN't rule. Would you suggest that the Scottish guidelines are a move away from the ISN't rule?
In regards to the ISN't rule, the Scottish guidance has already really moved away from that. And if you speak to the majority of glaucoma consultants here, they would probably call it the ISN't guide rather than the ISN't rule. And in fact, the lecture that Donald Montgomery allowed us to use, he actually called it the ISN't guide and said that really isn't really a rule anymore. The biggest thing is that optometrists really look at the whole neural retinal rim and determine where that's thinnest, and is there any damage there, and is it thinning pathologically at any point. And I think that's the biggest concern, rather than whether it follows the ISN't rule or not. And that's where the disc damage likelihood scale, the DDLS, comes into its own, because it encourages you to look at the whole neural retinal rim rather than quadrants, which the ESINT would.
Thank you very much, Kathy. So, once again, we've heard how upskilling and shared learning has been integral to implementing new guidelines and making better use of the skill set of optometrists overall.